is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. Where does time go? It doesn't seem a few minutes ago that I prepared for the last program, and here I am again. I have plenty of material. This is one of those weeks when there has, in between the two programs, been a message from Matthew, which is one I value, and I never seem to be short of different material for the subjects that I cover. As usual, Sheldon Nidal's message has been very informative, and I will start with that one. There's very little indeed that can be omitted from this particular message, so I will read from the beginning where Sheldon Nidal, on behalf of the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation, talks of our world, saying that around the world there is an unstoppable momentum for reform that is blooming even as the forces of chaos wreck the planet with death and destruction. And his message says that this seeming contradiction is intrinsic to the massive shift that is turning your population away from the ways of the old and toward the new. From your viewpoint, this process of change lacks drama. It is very subtle to start, almost imperceptible, and you need to look beyond the violence to see the whole picture. It moves forward in slow, meaningful steps, building momentum until when? Change bursts upon you, seemingly out of nowhere, and there is no going back. That is what is happening now. Furthermore, the forces working for a new reality fully understand how the Dark's cronies operate. Subterfuge and deceit are the normal modus operandi of the Dark, often spilling over into overt violence, which is easily ignited in regions of high volatility. While these tragic acts fill the deadlines, Dark stratagems behind the scenes are moving to stop the momentum for change. But this time, the usual trickery is not working as planned. Remember that your reality is transforming at a rapid rate, and the panic among the Dark is palpable and growing. Their absurd and disconcerting lashing out is evidence of their inner turmoil. Around them, a still invisible noose is quickly tightening, and yet their response is to pursue their original agendas as before. Stoking fear, hatred, and division has always worked wonders in the past to advance their cause, but conditions today are very different. Our Earth allies anticipated the Dark's covert moves under cover of the surface violence and are presently neutralizing these dastardly deeds. This counterattack is the start of a plan to release your abundance and drive the present American regime from power. Our role is to assist in this final push as so directed by heaven. The fall of this last Dark cabal is a vital element in the prime scenario to complete this first contact mission. Accordingly, we have dedicated as much time and personnel as needed. As we mentioned before, this first contact mission is much more complex a process than originally envisioned. In the beginning, we believe that the simple use of our technology, coupled with the return of your ascended masters, was more than sufficient for this purpose. But very quickly, our early experience with your planet showed otherwise. We learned the need to work closely with our Earth-bound supporters and to use this magnificent resource to advance the cause of first contact. What is now taking shape is proof of the wisdom of this approach. We greatly appreciate the resolute actions undertaken by our Earth allies and you. It was critical for you to anchor the energies of our joint intentions for this new reality and for the essential reunion with the peoples of Mother Earth. These celebrations draw closer with each day. The many things happening on your world have produced an energy grid that supports an ever-growing flux of new intentions. which are powerfully manifesting the conditions for completing this first contact mission. When we look at your world, we see a dichotomy between the light and dark. 30 years ago, this division was most conspicuous. Today, that gap is rapidly closing, as the work and our Earth allies nears its culmination. That is why we can confidently say that what is secretly happening can unleash your abundance and effect the unseating of the present American regime. A crucial contribution has been the way that those dedicated to freedom and the Constitution have reacted to the corporate-directed policies of the American administration. It is the courage and diligence of these true patriots that can finally bring peace to your troubled world. Once the pressure is off the dollar and a new economic system declared, a new monetary system based on hard metals and real worth is to be formally introduced. This is to inaugurate the open manifestation of your new reality. Global abundance transforms your reality and is a factor in putting to flight many of your deepest fears. The message goes on to say that present conventional wisdom suggests that a true worth system can cause a massive global deflation as national currency systems realign to the newly set standards. This deflation is to be prevented from instigating an economic downturn by means of enormous amounts of prosperity that wait to be unleashed upon the world. And it is this abundance that greatly worries the present American regime. As part of its control matrix, this regime has prepared a series of draconian rules designed to impede and inspect the flow of funds through one of the planet's primary financial hubs, the major cities of America. They hope to use these devices to prevent these funds from financing a regime change, or indeed, beneficial change of any kind. To their dismay, these efforts have failed to curtail the onward progress of those working for change. This final secret struggle for control of the American government is crucial in many ways. America is one of the prime keys to reforming the present global monetary system. This system has been in effect since the close of World War II. Most of the global financial community comprehends how unstable the world financial system has become. This is due in part to massive inflation and extensive misuse of financial instruments. The misuse of financial instruments put into place by the agreement signed in the mid-1940s at Bretton Woods. The time has come for a thorough correction. It is the intention of our Earth allies to use these comprehensive adjustments to properly address the need for sweeping international debt forgiveness. These acts can permit your planet to finally move toward true personal and national sovereignty. Overall, the Dark Cabal is using its strong power base to guarantee a means for its self-preservation. In today's context, this could only be a temporary one at best. This aim has caused much grief to many and has led to some very sticky situations for certain elements allied with this cabal. We reiterate once again that the relentless headway being made is nearing the moment when a sudden regime change is to hugely alter the power structure of your globe. Too many sections of the world's financial system are on the verge of rebellion. The seams of this 60-year-old system are at breaking point. With the pressure for its demise mounting, the ability of this regime to defend itself dwindles by the day. This alone signals its collapse. At the start of our discussion today, we noted that global conditions seem to indicate only increased chaos. We then explained that, on the contrary, the underlying activities point to a swiftly approaching metamorphosis of your world. In short, the present power structure is at loggerheads with your divinely prescribed future, and is thus doomed. Our Earth allies have worked tirelessly at solving the serious obstacles that until recently blocked their way. Now that this minefield is cleared, their way forward is much easier. Despite the challenges ahead, the prevailing belief is that these can be surmounted swiftly. From our vantage point, we see that their current actions can stem the tide of the Dark's agenda for confusion and thus permit our allies to finish paving the way to first contact. And finally, today, we talked about recent developments on your world and put them into the context of what is planned for your future. It strongly indicates that first contact is getting very near. I have to say in passing that there have been quite a few messages that have come through indicating that in the days that are left of this month, we may well see some dramatic happenings. So we wait to see indeed what that may be. It still could be connected with the financial changes that are almost at our door, or of course it may be some knock-on effect from what is happening in the Middle East right now. Now, on the 15th of July, which was last Saturday, we had a message from Matthew, and they're always very welcome, because he addresses current matters and takes questions from the many subscribers to his messages, and of course it brings up very topical matters. Now, this week the first question that was addressed to Matthew was regarding his comments on Israel's intentions in the Lebanon and what he would see as the outcome of this violence. Also, together with that question, was mentioned one of another reader who asked about a related issue and wondered whether the Palestinians would ever see an end to their suffering at the hands of Israel. Now, Michael replied, "I shall speak about the factors that are not apparent to the eye. But to quickly ease your wondering, first I say that the collective assessment of this situation is that there will be a short time of retaliation for Israel's bombing of Lebanon, but the fighting will not escalate into an all-out warfare between those two countries or pulling neighbouring countries. What we see in Earth's energy field of potential is what will be perceived as cooler heads prevailing, but actually it will be lighter hearts. Light is continually intensifying as Earth is ascending, and people are responding in two ways. The higher frequencies that are creating more fear, desperation and rash decisions in those who are darkly inclined are renewing spiritual awareness and demands for peaceful settlements in light-filled people. To address Israel's intentions in Lebanon, I clarify that the intentions are the Zionists in control there, not the country's people, who long have been weary of warring and destruction within their borders and in nearby nations. If questioned with the assurance of safety, most Israelis would acknowledge their leaders' outrageous strikes in Lebanon and decades of brutally unfair treatment of Palestinians. The people of Israel are longing for peace and living in concert with their neighbours. This is true of all countries' peoples. It is the dark minds in government or military leadership, wherever warfare has been waged, civil or international, that are bent on conquering and oppressing others. And these leaders are controlled by the behind-the-scenes top powermongers of the Illuminati, whose entire kit and caboodle of intentions will never bear fruit. In reply to the second question, I repeat what I said in previous messages. The greatest change underway on your planet is within all of you. Light receptive people will accompany Earth on her journey, with love energy magnifying as she progresses toward her destination. and those who cling to their dark ways will not go along. When only light beings reside in your world, Israelis and Palestinians will live together in friendship and cooperation, as will peoples of all nations. This is not centuries off. Stimulated by light, reconciliation of age-old differences and release of bitterness is underway. Now then, the unseen major factors I mentioned. I did touch upon some, but it is necessary to see all of those influences in context of the entire Mideast situation. That region has been a hotbed of violence almost continuously from the time when greed, competition and betrayal came with the first civilizations that arrived on the planet and settled there. Thus, karmic balancing has been in effect ever since. But even though the relentless negativity in the area started in antiquity, it is the fresh karmic lessons that are being completed. A second factor is the higher frequencies in which Earth is revolving are magnifying dominant characteristics in human nature, making the good stronger than ever, and the same with the bad, as you could view these opposites. This has led to desperation in Zionist leaders who have been controlling not only Israel's politics, but influencing major happenings globally. They are making obvious, foolhardy decisions like overkill, retaliation to an incident, and continuing to suppress the Palestinian populace. Another factor is God's honoring of Earth's desire that no more multinational wars may shed blood on her body. And the next part is something very worth noting, and I read, "And if need be, our space family will prevent this without the population at large becoming aware of their involvement." And last, what is happening throughout the Mideast, indeed your world, is that energy momentum long ago set in motion now is on an accelerated course to play itself out so the Golden Age can be ushered in. Susie, Matthew's mother, who directs the questions, thanked him for that reassuring explanation. And then she asked for comment on the bombing of the trains in India and a thwarted attempt to do the same in the New York City subways. Matthew replied that the bombing in India was a tragedy for all affected, and the New York City situation was a tall tale. Actually, it was the reverse of what was intended. It was a failed effort by Illuminati-connected terrorists that was reported as success of the intelligence community. Matthew was then asked a question by Susie herself, and she said that since the dark hold on to our world was supposed to end a few years ago, it didn't, because some souls reneged on their agreement to join the light, are any current deaths in wars and suicide bombings or other terrorist acts part of original soul contracts, or have all of them been amended? And Matthew said that souls who embody, since the reneging, chose to do so knowing what they will encounter, and those who came in prior to that time worked out either original or amended contracts, but not necessarily limited to those specific parameters insofar as cause of death. When a contract's major provisions have been completed and the longevity clause reaches fullness, the specific manner of physical death is not important as long as it is in keeping with the soul's choice. That is, if a contract calls for a sudden, painless end of the lifetime, an instant death from any cause serves to fulfill that choice. If a soul chooses to experience a violent ending to balance other lifetimes, dying in any kind of traumatic circumstances can serve this purpose. When the latter happens outside the contract, through divine grace, the soul has a choice. It may evolve to its next learning level with third density karma completion granted, or it may incarnate at the same level and enjoy a gracious, fulfilling life with the opportunities for spiritual growth without traumatic aspects. Souls who tended to be timid in the immediate past line usually choose something pleasantly familiar and the bolder ones opt to see what else is out there. Susie replied, that's interesting and sounds reasonable. What about the hundreds of thousands of gravely injured survivors in these kind of situations? In many cases, a productive, fulfilling life is lost to these individuals, and their families suffer dreadfully too. Do their pre-birth choices specifically include losing limbs or eyesight or suffering irreparable brain damage or becoming emotional basket cases due to their violent experiences? Is karmic choice involved in lethal illnesses or deformed babies due to toxic radiation? And Matthew replied, I know your feelings, they are shared by many, that people don't know about soul contracts and pre-birth family agreements, but they do know about pain, destroyed lives, broken dreams, and maybe financial ruin, life in a hospital, family separation. Yes, it does seem cruel and unfair, and in physical experiencing, it is for those who did not choose it, but that's why divine grace provides that equalizing opportunity or accelerated soul growth for those individuals and the people dearest to them. We understand that this is not within mortal understanding or of comfort. It is only my words. What they're explaining is something you cannot consciously relate to. So there is heartache for the millions suffering from any cause. You do not understand either that their situations also are learning opportunities for you to conquer apathy and master compassion. If you could see the light that your feelings of compassion are generating to uplift all souls, you would say hallelujah. And fear is the opposite in its effects on you and all of earth. So do feel compassion, but never fear for those who are suffering. Susie said, you're right about my not being able to emotionally grasp everything you're explaining. And surely I'm not the only one, but it still gives me some sense of peace. Back to the questions. She said, this is my favourite one of several about Patrick Fitzgerald. And she said, did he sell out to the Bush gang on Rove? What's he doing to get this indictment show on the road again? And she said, yesterday I received a question about the lawsuit filed by Valerie Plame and her husband, Joseph Wilson, accusing Cheney, Rove and Libby of the leak that she was a CIA operative. Will this be the uncovering of the Bush administration and expose their lies and deceit to control the masses? And Matthew replied, Mother, this is a fine example of the benefit in knowing in what's behind the tip of the iceberg. Fitzgerald, a highly evolved light being, did not sell out, but he did withdraw from vigorously pushing indictments because he took seriously the death threats against him and his family, and who can blame him? With the mountains of evidence he has uncovered, no one is more aware than he about the means undertaken to silence individuals whom the Dark Ones consider dangerously knowledgeable. Although he and his family are protected in the light, to stem their fear about the threats, he put on the back burner his legal prominence. However, as evidence emerges through other avenues, it will be greatly aided by his quiet efforts to see justice done. And yes, the Plame Wilson lawsuit is one of those avenues. Matthew continued to say, in hope there is light. Nevertheless, learning to trust intuition is vital. Please forgive my sounding like a broken record, but intuition is your conscious recognition of messages from your soul, and wherein all truths are known. Rather than continuing to ask for information from external sources, including receivers whose sources you respect, ask within for the answers. That is where the purest truth is known. Susie went on to mention other messages, and she was saying, can you say something that could be helpful to people who are trying to feel confident about their level of discernment? And Matthew said, actually, I can say quite a bit. Self-confidence about discernment comes, like every other important accomplishment, with practice, perseverance, patience, and especially trust in self. In beginning stages of any endeavor, you have teachers or mentors of some kind, and their instruction is your foundation. If you are content to remain always a student, you'll be a thin shadow of your teachers and never realize yourself. but you wish to soar in your own mastery, and trusting that you can is the reason you do. It is the same with developing reliable discerning ability. Don't get bogged down in analysing or evaluating information. Trust what you sense rather than the machinations of your mind. Try to repeat the simple guidance I have offered before. Pay attention to your natural reaction to what you hear or read. If the information flows easily, very likely it is true. If you feel some resistance to it, very likely it is not. Your soul is part of the mass consciousness, where all is known. So whenever you sense your soul is speaking, pay attention. Some information you may not wish to believe because it is not comforting, but if you sense it is factual, trust your reaction. Conversely, something may sound rosy indeed, but if you feel doubt, that is resistance, and trust this reaction. Now then, some receivers who believe they are telepathically connecting and communicating with Sananda are not. They are reaching dark sources who claim to be Sananda and who give false information that the receivers send far and wide, thus misinforming many others. Dark entities are duping the same receivers and others as well by claiming to be Mother Mary, Archangel Michael, Hatton, Ashtar, Maitreya, and other highly evolved souls. Be as discerning of channeled information as you are of everything you hear from earthbound sources. Let me correct myself and say, be even more discerning of channeled messages. With good reason, mainstream media have become widely suspect in their veracity, so admonitions about their news no longer are necessary. It's with far greater reason that you must unerringly discern between the truth and the lies in channeled messages, because this is the guidance that many of you use to chart your spiritual pathway. Discernment is all-encompassing. It distinguishes between the important and the unimportant of life, not only between what is true and what is false. There is a vast difference between satisfying your curiosity and expanding your interest in growing spiritually. In the lifetime, it doesn't matter one whit whether you know Ken Lay died of natural causes or was assassinated, or if other recent mysterious deaths were really the suicides or accidents as reported. But it matters monumentally if unwittingly you follow the influence of the darkness and don't recognize your soul's nudgings to get back onto a lighted pathway. Knowing if some book is factual or not has no bearing whatsoever on being consciously aligned with your soul's choices. Just as being engrossed in the lives of entertainment stars or sports figures does not. Bickering about trivial issues, following every fashion fad, keeping abreast of local or global scandals, how important is any of that to your spiritual evolution, your purpose in choosing this physical experience? I don't mean to sound harsh or critical of your interest in the joyous, and I am judging none. What I wish to do is to motivate you to focus on what is most significant, imperative, to you in this unique time when everything is accelerating and time is not your ally. If you are satisfied with the mundane, so be it, and totally without judgment. But if you desire to move forward in fulfilling your chosen missions, please give attention to my words that I mean only to be helpful. Susie then said, Matthew, is there more concern about our progress than there has been? And Matthew said, I don't know how best to answer that. That is, I don't know how to answer without setting off alarm bells in some minds. And that's not my intention any more than it was to scold anyone. Absolutely, there's no concern about Earth's course and pace or the many who are awakening and are joy to us. But yes, those who are still snugly asleep, consciously and spiritually, are concerned. Because you don't see fast action where you want to see it, you don't realize how swiftly this transition is into the frequencies where light is so intense that fence stragglers will be knocked off on the wrong side, and it is our love for each soul in your world that underlines my speaking out so strongly. Although we know that those who lag will be given other opportunities to grow in accordance with their learning needs, we, like Earth herself, would love to have every soul make the full journey with her. Susie then said, what's behind Warren Buffett's decision to give billions to Bill Gates' humanitarian endowments? Is this interest impeding spiritual growth? Matthew said, no, it's not. And no, it's not an arbitrary difference. It's the difference between idle curiosity and genuine interest in those dollars earmarked for health, education, and other humanitarian programs on a global scale. I wish I could say that Buffett's heart is behind his decision, but it is not. It may seem that he earned his money honestly through wise investments, but if you consider that the Illuminati control every means by which big money is made or lost, if that is the intention, primarily in stock markets and other trading avenues, you can see that he amassed his billions by being one of the manipulators of economies worldwide. He is well aware that if the money powers fall, and since he is one of the foremost amongst them, he isn't accepting that they will, fortunes like his will be reallocated in a just, judicious manner by the transition team economic experts. And he is guarding the bulk of his money in charitable foundations while accepting international acclaim for his generosity. Furthermore, he knows that gargantuan wealth like his is without tangible basis, but rather it is merely computer transactions. So in a way, his magnanimity is only a hollow gesture. And so, as he said, none of it will actually be used for the stated purposes. And as he said, oh, some will, but a fraction of what has been declared, enough for evidence that he is making good on his pledge. Susie then said, the next question is here, how can we successfully remove energy blockages? And Matthew said, I'd like to say that this is as easily done as said, and in higher densities it is because people know that they have this power and see no obstacle is insurmountable. Most of Earth's peoples don't know this and see situations as beyond their control, whether personal health or financial issues or world conditions. Yet belief in self-empowerment does remove energy blockages. Unless you are experiencing the provisions of your soul contracts, wherein you chose poverty over abundance, illness over health, and anxiety over optimism, for example. Knowing the difference between fulfilling chosen karma and blocking the flow of energy that could achieve your desired result goes back to asking for answers within. Whatever the soul's message, you can feel a sense of purpose and peace knowing that you are growing spiritually from chosen experiencing or learning that isn't necessary in this lifetime, and you have the power to change it. Susie said, is substance abuse or other criminal activity on anyone's part of their soul's contract? If so, is a person wrong to intervene, even if the intent is benevolent, trying to prevent that soul's negative experience through raising his or her consciousness? Does either person receive light from such an intervention affair? And Matthew said, your society has stipulated what criminal behaviour and suitable punishment are. Crime and punishment, by your definition, is not part of a soul contract. Only chosen experiencing for balancing other lifetimes is. Third density relationships are necessarily complex. You can try them to be so for the purpose of experiencing the full range of emotions and behaviour at that stage of comprehension, and everything in your world has been manifested to assist in your learning. In the light of higher vibrations, you will see that living in love is simplicity itself. But to address the questions more directly, the portrayed individuals know neither their own nor the other soul's contracts, yet each acts from inner urgings along with conscious perceptions and incentives. The effect for the person intervening depends on the motive, whether self-serving or selflessness, that is, to control another's life to the advantage of the person's own, or to act from sincere benevolence. The former generates negativity to deal with in this or another lifetime, and the latter generates light to enrich this lifetime and beyond. the intended recipient will most benefit by heeding his or her intuition about life's direction. In this, there is conscious alignment with the soul's need for experiencing, even though society may see it as criminal. Finally, Matthew was asked, "Can you please tell us something new, the ultimate encouragement, so that we can stick to the light pathway on our own?" Matthew said, "Mother dear, I can't tell you anything new. I can only tell you again, never are any of you on your own. Always intense light beam from myriad souls throughout the universe is fortifying your only soul to master lifetime lessons and evolve. If you could but realize the love without reservation and abundant blessings that are always with you every step along your pathway, your gratitude would be blinding brilliance in itself. Always you are within the oneness, embraced by God's emissaries that you don't consciously know. This is how it has been from Creator's first expression of its pure love light essence and the creation of God and this universe. You only need believe that you are inseparable, beloved part of this infinite, eternal totality, this I Am oneness, and you will be filled with rejoicing. Please, all of you, let this cosmic truth be your reality, your ultimate encouragement." So yet again, there are some very, very good questions from the subscribers, which Susie usually manages to sort through. And I think, without fail, each time Matthew is able to come up with answers that surely satisfy our curiosity. It's interesting what he has said about this current affair between Israel and Lebanon, and I think it's very reassuring to know that it won't develop into a full all-out war, because just speaking from information given on the latest news, it would seem that the reason the US will not ask Israel to exercise restraint is because they have actually agreed to allow them to strengthen the borders between them and the Lebanon. And we learned today here in the UK that Israel are massing tanks and troops ready to take their positions up on the border. So one has to hope that perhaps in the next few days this will be achieved, and the cooler heads that Matthew refers to will come into the scenario and broker some sort of agreement that will see an end to this mini war, which is what it really is. Anyway, we shall see. Now, I'm coming at this stage to my UFO spot. I haven't got anything extraordinary today, but I found one which I thought in its time must have been quite interesting. It may have been one of the perhaps earliest incidents of where someone was hypnotically regressed to account for lost time in one of these UFO experiences. So it's only a short account, but like my usual ones, this comes from the Flying Saucer Review, and this was extracted from items which appeared in NICAP's UFO Investigator, which came out in March 1968. And it refers to a police officer Shermer, of Ashland, Nebraska, and he reportedly came across what was described as a bright aluminium-coloured UFO hovering a few feet above the road. And Shermer stated he could see red lights inside the object, which was about 20 feet long. And he said as his car approached to within 40 feet of the unknown craft, Shermer said the object's lights began to flash, and the UFO rose to about 50 feet. Then it shot a red-orange beam towards the ground, emitted a shrill beeping noise, and vanished straight up. Now, that was all, apparently, at that stage, that police officer Schirmer was aware of. And then he was questioned, and one has to assume they found that there was some time missing from his observation of this UFO, and when he evidently came back into full consciousness, and he was questioned under hypnosis at what they call here the Colorado Project. Now, it reads that the first witness to be hypnotized under the auspices of the Colorado Project has reportedly described, while under hypnosis, a fantastic sighting said to involve an extraterrestrial being, communication with the saucer occupant, and a paralyzing beam. Now, police officer Herbert Schirmer was placed under hypnosis by Dr. Leo R. Sprinkle, a psychologist at the University of Wyoming who is an ICAP member. And indeed, I'm sure since that time in 1968, his name has become what we might say a readily recognized one because of his great work in the UFO field. Certainly a name I'm very familiar with. Anyway, the report goes on to say that the Colorado Project has confirmed that the patrolman was brought to the UFO study group at Boulder and hypnotized to recount his story. Now, apparently no conclusions have been released by the project, but a detailed story was given to the Omaha World Herald by a police officer who was present during the sessions. And this is how he reads it, that during hypnosis, Schirmer told Dr. Sprinkle and the project officials that he saw the object as it hovered close to the road. And he said, I tried to radio in, and I had one hand on the mic and the other on my gun, but the beam of light that came down from the underside of the object kept me from doing anything. According to the notes taken by Ashland Police Chief William Vlashin during the hypnotic experiment, Schirmer said that as the beam flooded his cruiser with light, a small human form, 4 or 5 feet tall, came from beneath the craft and approached him. He also said that the figure, in some manner, communicated with him. There were also other beings aboard the craft, Schirmer stated, while in deep trance. They are not from a planet we are familiar with, Schirmer reported during the hypnotic session. They came from a neighboring galaxy, though they have bases on Jupiter and Mars. They told me that this was the first of 3 meetings I would have with them. The next 2 are supposed to come about before the end of 1968. Schirmer also said that the UFO was operated against gravity and was extracting electricity from a nearby power line to set up a force field that could stop anything from interfering with them at this time. Now, it's a bit unfortunate that there is no more to add to that report, certainly not at the moment, although in subsequent flying saucer reviews, I'm hoping there may be a follow-up. At that time, NICAP was still investigating the case, and they were saying that they couldn't release a full account until the conclusions could be released after Dr. Condon's final public report. So that was it at that particular time. But an interesting one. It rather suggests that he must have been taken into the craft, and he obviously had a mental or telepathic communication with them from which they were prepared to tell him about the craft. It's mind-boggling, of course, to think that these beings came from another galaxy, but also interesting to know that they appeared in apparently a humanoid form. Whether that means that is their natural form, one doesn't know, but there you are. That's an interesting one from 1968. Now I'm going to come to what I call general news, which is a small collection this time of little odds and ends, but nevertheless interesting. There was one I came across in a magazine that I get called Nexus, and they have usually a page on science news. And in the issue April, May this year, there were a couple of items that I thought were extremely interesting, and they are more relevant at a time when we have our eyes on alternative energy means. And it reads as follows, that this was a report from The Guardian, which is a UK paper, from the 4th of November 2005. And it talks of a new source of near limitless power that costs virtually nothing, uses tiny amounts of water as its fuel, and produces next to no waste. And Randall Mills, a Harvard University medic who also studied electrical engineering at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, claims to have built a prototype power source that generates up to 1,000 times more heat than conventional fuel. An independent scientist claimed to have verified the experiments, and Dr. Mills says that his company, Black Light Power, has tens of millions of dollars in investment lined up to bring the idea to market, and he claims to be just months away from unveiling his creation. And Dr. Mills claimed he has produced a new form of hydrogen, the simplest of all atoms, with just a single proton circled by one electron. And in his, he calls it hydrino, the electron sits a little closer to the proton than normal, and the formation of the new atoms from traditional hydrogen releases huge amounts of energy. And he's saying this is really scientific heresy. According to quantum mechanics, electrons can only exist in an atom in strictly defined orbits. The shortest distance allowed between the proton and the electron in hydrogen is fixed. The two particles are simply not allowed to get any closer. So according to Professor Rick Nuss, a chemist at the University of North Carolina who was allowed access to Black Light Laboratories, the first product to be built with Black Light's technology will be a household heater, which will be available in as little as 4 years. And as the technology is scaled up, he says, bigger furnaces will be able to boil water and turn turbines to produce electricity. And in a recent economic forecast, Professor Mass calculated that hydrino energy would cost around 1.2 cents, that is American cents, per kilowatt hour, and that compares to 5 cents per kilowatt for coal and 6 cents for nuclear energy. So there you are, it's one of these new energy devices that's going to have a massive saving, and I have to think perhaps that once the ETs arrive, these type of technologies will be used and speeded up for the benefit of everyone. The second item on the science news in that issue, April, May of Nexus, was talking about a scientific breakthrough that has stunned the world, because a team of South African scientists has developed a revolutionary, highly efficient solar power technology that will enable homes to obtain all their electricity from the sun. Now, solar power, of course, is not new, but these unique solar panels will make it possible for houses to become completely self-sufficient for energy supplies. And the panels are able to generate enough energy to run stoves, geysers, hot water heaters, lights, TVs, fridges, computers, in short, all the mod cons of the modern house. The new technology should be available in South Africa within a year. Now, through a special converter, energy can be fed directly into the wiring of existing houses, and new powerful storage units will allow energy storage to meet demands even in the winter. While direct sunlight is ideal for high energy generation, other daytime light also generates energy via the panels, and the panels are so efficient they can even operate through a Cape Town winter. Now, a team of scientists led by University of Johannesburg, which was formerly the Rand Afrikaans University, scientist Professor Vivian Alberts achieved the breakthrough after 10 years of research. The South African technology is now being patented across the world, and the German company IFE Solar Systems, one of the world leaders in solar energy, has invested more than 500 million rand in the South African invention, is set to manufacture 500,000 of the panels before the end of the year, at a new plant in Germany. And apparently, the new alloy solar panel is much more efficient than the costly old silicon solar panels, because the new panel consists of a thin layer of unique metal alloy that converts light into energy. And the photoresponsive alloy can operate on virtually all flexible surfaces, which means it could in the future find a host of other applications. And Professor Albert said the new panels are approximately 5 microns thick. Now you can relate that to a human hair, which is 20 microns thick. Well, the older silicon panels are 350 microns thick. And he said the cost of the South African technology is a fraction of the less effective silicon solar panels. And Albert's also said that in Switzerland, it is already compulsory for all new houses to include solar technology to lessen energy demands on the national grid. Now, that came from a South African paper called the Saturday Argus. That's it. That report originally came out on the 11th of February this year. So there you are. That's just two, I'm sure, of many, many inventions that are waiting to come to light, including, obviously, the many that have been suppressed in the interests of the big companies. Now, I don't think this is really what I call new news, but Edmund Conway, the economics editor, on the 14th of July, filed a report saying the US could be going bankrupt. Now, I don't think that's new at all, but I thought I'd read it because it's only a short extract saying that a ballooning budget deficit and a pensions and welfare time bomb could send the economic superpower into insolvency, according to research by Professor Lawrence Kotikoff for the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, a leading constituent of the US Federal Reserve. And Professor Kotikoff said that by some measures, the US is already bankrupt. To paraphrase the Oxford English Dictionary, is the United States at the end of its resources, exhausted, stripped, bare, destitute, bereft, wanting in property, or wrecked in consequence of failure to pay its creditors, he asked. Tell us how you really feel. And according to his central analysis, the US government is indeed bankrupt, insofar as it will be unable to pay its creditors, who in this context our current and future generations, to whom it has explicitly or implicitly promised future net payments of various kinds. So there we are. I have another report here that came through a Russian subscriber, Sorsha Fal. It came out on the 17th of this month, and you can find it on the website whatdoesitmean.com. And it's a Russian military analysis and FSB sources now reporting today that the United States military special forces have seized control of the nation of Israel's nuclear complex, located at Dimona, with a contingent of their special forces troops from the American war zone currently located in Iraq. And it says that these reports detail that this action by the American military leadership was an indirect response to Chinese President Hu's threat to the American president that should the Strait of Hormuz be blockaded by Iran, due to the escalating crisis between Israel and its Muslim neighbors, China would consider that action as a declaration of war against the Chinese people. And the American response to this threat from China, coming from China, President Hu, in his face-to-face meeting with the United States President Bush at the G8 summit, was to assure both China's President Hu and Russia's President Putin that the American military leadership would secure Israel's nuclear weapons and limit their, that is Israel's, incursion into Lebanon. And it says that in return for the American military leadership securing Israel's nuclear weapons, both President Putin and President Hu have allowed a 72-hour window for Israel to secure its northern border with Lebanon, with the understanding that Israel would not attack either Syria or Iran, and whom Israel has blamed for being the instigators behind this current war. So there we are. That's that's interesting, isn't it? Something you hear from a totally outside source that has some bearing on what is happening. And that came out on the 17th of July, so there we are. There was one little interesting, rather encouraging report I saw this week about a three-year-old boy called Ben who had been blind since 3 years. And what I thought was very interesting is that because of his blindness, he's developed a way of getting around using sound. And it's very much in the principle of what a bat uses. And he keeps making a series of clicks. And from that, he can judge where other things are. And apparently, he's so expert, he can speed down hallways, he can make sharp turns around corners. And in many respects, he just acts like a typical teenager. And I thought that's amazing, because he actually listens for the echoes from his clicks as they bounce off the surfaces from around him. And apparently the clicks are as loud as the snapping of fingers. So isn't that amazing how adaptable human people are when they have some disablement like that? I thought that was wonderful. A final item in the general news is something I have heard before, but it's emphasised here, that in Zagreb, they have a 45-year-old elephant, and she has been a long-time resident of the Zagreb Zoo and was bereaved and inconsolable after her pachyderm partner, tens of years, died of cancer. That was, the report said, until she heard Mozart. She apparently, before this, she was refusing to eat, became uncommunicative, showed all the signs of a serious depression, and by sheer accident, Suma's keepers discovered that the healing power of Mozart extends to the animal kingdom too. So earlier this month, the Sioux organised a concert of classical music just opposite Suma's dwelling. And as soon as the concert started, they could see that she was really fascinated. And she leaned against the fence and closed her eyes and listened without moving the entire concert, he said. Besides Mozart, she took in pieces by Vivaldi and Schubert too. And when the authorities realised that classical music seemed to help Suma cope with her grief, they bought a stereo and installed it so that she could get a daily dose of music therapy. And they said she especially adores Mozart. So isn't that a wonderful story? And I think we all realise the value of sound in that way, because we have an appreciation of nice, smooth, easy listening music. We do sense that they produce moods in us, and they can be, as with the Suma the elephant, they can overcome perhaps negative moods and lift us up. So there you are, they're wonderful stories. I don't know where the time has gone. I'm coming into the closing minutes of my programme already. It's quite unbelievable. I'm talking non-stop for the best part, well, it is an hour, and it's strange, it only seems about 25 minutes or so. I had intended to read you one or two other messages, but there you are. I think that's filled the programme up quite well. And we seem to be in such an important period of time that I think week on week you do wonder, you know, what there might have happened in the coming week that will make the news headlines for my next program. Anyway, I will depart now. I will say thank you to everyone for being with me, and I hope you'll be with me next Friday. So I will close by saying God bless you all.
Service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.